You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Connecting the dots after a four-day weekend. There's been no live broadcast since Wednesday when we had Rod Bennett and Dr. Robert George on the show. So that was like a big deal.
Yeah.
Dr. George is like a real like famous thinker type guy. And
that's
so
awesome.
Yeah, so that was fun. And then 2 days of goof off. Hope, did you have a good Thanksgiving?
We did. We had a very good. We had 9 of the 10 at home, so that was fun too.
That sounds good. Yeah, we had all 4 of our guys plus sundry spousal units, significant others, and
yes, family.
Children.
Yes.
Had the kids bouncing around. We went to mass on Sunday and just happened to get there as Cal and his wife and their little girls Seraphim and Charlotte were piling out of the car. Seraphim is 2 and she is just cute as a bug's ear.
So she sat on
Papa's lap during mass, and when the basket came around it went down the row in front of her, and then they handed her the basket.
And
so she handed the collection basket to the collector guy, to the usher guy, and then she looks at her dad and wipes the back of her hand across his brow and goes, "Whew."
I was gonna have to participate. Okay.
She said, "I was helping," right? She handed this basket to wait.
She was.
It was about an hour. You know, but she was helping. So God bless her.
Go.
Yeah. So anyway, so we had a crowd of people over, and it turned into one of these kind of family roundtable things where children. My kids have a policy of doling out to mom and dad on a need to know basis information about things that they nearly did to kill themselves or a building or cause a forest fire or, initiate a landslide. About 5 or 10 years after the event, we find out about these things.
I think that's about an appropriate waiting time to make sure that, you know, all culpability and liability has been, you know,
right.
It's over.
Yeah. So periodically they will tell us these stories about, oh, did we never tell you about the time that, you know, Luke almost killed himself jumping off a cliff or, you know.
No, we missed that. Sorry.
Didn't know that story. You're not dead, so I assume that the story has a happy ending. So they had these kinds of stories, and then they started telling them on our youngest, who is 19.
Oh, contract's been broken. Oh, dear.
Yeah, and so he was like, what? They're going, actually, we've got the video right here. Should we show mom and dad?
Oh, gee. We'll post it on the internet, on the YouTube channels after this conversation.
So that's when we found out that last year, after we took our Christmas tree down, we didn't get it to the recycling thing on time. Like sometimes the scouts come around and gather trees or whatever. And we always keep our tree up until Epiphany. Because I figure you only get Christmas once, so I plan on squeezing every drop of Christmas out of Christmas.
That's my rationale.
Tear my tree down until Epiphany, and so we took the tree down, and then we just chucked it around by the side of the house and let it lay there for several months. So anyway, our youngest son Sean decided he called dibs on the tree.
Okay.
And so he wanted to go with his buddies down to Edmonds Beach. We live about 5 5 minutes from Puget Sound, which is this finger of the Pacific.
Yes, beautiful. I've been there.
Oh, you have? Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah. So, so Edmonds sits right on the shore of Puget Sound. I go over there sometimes and have seafood or just walk on the beach and so forth. And so there's little fire pits and things so you can go and build a fire on the beach. So he said, I get the tree. And so he decided for his birthday, which is in the middle of March, that he wanted to go burn the tree.
Oh,
figured, why not? You know, go burn the tree. It's on a beach. You're not going to set anything on fire. Everything will be fine. So knock yourself out. Buddies, go have a good time. And plus, we get rid of the tree. So that's good. So he goes away and does that. And then later in the evening, he came home and we said, so how'd it go? And he says, fine. And he like dashes into his room, right?
Okay.
And we thought, just being antisocial or he's in a bad mood. I don't know. So we didn't think anything else about it. Well, it turns out, as we saw on Thanksgiving evening, someone captured video of the event.
See, this is why I was really grateful that I had my adolescence before cell phones. So all my stupidity cannot be proven.
So, Sean, apparently Sean or somebody decided that the tree, although it had been laying there for 3 months and so was dry, also has been laying in Washington weather for 3 months. And so
might be wet. Yeah.
Extremely damp, even though the wood is dried out inside. So it's going to need a fire starter, they decided.
Oh, now, no.
You might think that they would just go get something like lighter fluid, wouldn't you? Well,
yes.
No, they didn't do that. Instead, they got pure acetone.
Oh, my gosh.
So now, it turns out that acetone assumes its vaporous gaseous state much faster than they had
anticipated.
So
they're lucky to have eyebrows.
So Sean lit a match.
Oh, no.
And he stuck it at the base of the tree. And it's at night when they did this. But you can kind of see this sort of shadowy outline of Sean. And then suddenly,
fireball.
Boom. So he survived just fine. Turns out it sets the tree on fire really good.
Yeah.
And, he survived it, but his right arm for several months after that was baby smooth.
Oh my gosh!
No hair.
Doing yourself electrolysis.
So it was great. So on Thanksgiving, one of the things we were thankful for was that all of our children are still alive.
Yes.
After the things that they do that we only find out about months or years later.
You realize that you're terrifying me because I'm going to have 10 of these people who are going to come up with these sort of stories.
Oh, yeah, they'll all come up with dumb things that they've done, you know.
Yes.
And, of course, I got my own stories to tell.
Right, yes.
About things that I've done, which perhaps at some point I will tell one of those stories about stupid things that I've done.
There you go. All I know is they can't actually prove mine. I have no witnesses.
Well, you know, you want to be the source of the story, and plus you can polish it up too.
True, you can make it sound better.
If there's no photography, then you can make it sound better.
I was completely innocent.
Yes,
it just happened.
Yeah. So it was a thankful Thanksgiving. And of course, it was just, we just had a great time. And we told these kinds of stories and cracked each other up. And one of the things we were commenting about was, I hear all the time, of course, stories about holiday tension and how awful it is to get together for Thanksgiving because, you know, people get in fights and all this kind of stuff. And I just have no associations of that with the holidays. It never happened in the home where I was growing up, and it's not happened since I've gotten married. So holidays were always just fun, you know. And it was, you know, we get up on Thanksgiving morning, and everybody's working hard, and we're getting the dishes put away and set out, and Jan's in the kitchen bustling around, and she's our air traffic controller, so she's commanding, you know, us on what needs done next. And we're just, yes, ma'am, you know.
That's right. Well, we had the, yeah. Well, we always, you know, Thanksgiving is always a huge summit of activity at our house because my husband's birthday is right before it.
Oh, yeah.
And so we have like a feast. It's like a week of feasting is what I want to call it.
Oh, okay.
So it's fun. But, you know, we always have everybody gets assigned a dish to make. So, like, you know, the 9-year-old and the 11-year-old were excited because they were making the cranberries this time around. And, you know, okay. The 12-year-old's making the stuffing and I'm making the turkey. And, of course, the turkey wasn't defrosted after 3 days of leaving it in the refrigerator. So we had to go get a fresh turkey. But this meant more leftovers. We weren't really upset, you know.
And you have two turkeys now.
Well, we have two turkey carcasses now, I'll put it that way.
Okay. I saw the Porsche. So we got home from Mass last Sunday, uh-huh. Not yesterday, but a week ago last Sunday. And Jan says, could you go get us a turkey? I said, okay. So yeah. I went and got, she says, it's going to need to be over 20 pounds because we were going to have like 10 people.
Yeah.
I said, okay. So I went and got a 22-pound frozen turkey at Winco.
That's
and
good.
It brought it back and I said, so you want me to stick this in the freezer? She says, no,
right.
It's gonna take 3 days to thaw out. I said, oh, okay.
Yes.
So that's what I first learned, you know, because I'm dumb, so I was just learning this kind of stuff. So I went back to Winco on Thanksgiving Eve and here are these poor schlubs standing there looking at these frozen turkeys, just about to buy a frozen turkey on Thanksgiving Eve.
Oh,
and
dear,
I would be you if my wife had not educated me. So thank you, Jan, for educating me. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We are here today with Sherry Antonetti, and we're going to be talking about the theology of waiting around right after this.
See you soon.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Sherry Antonetti.
Hello.
Sherry Antonetti and I are here available to talk to. If you have any complaints, direct them to me. If you have any praise, direct it to Sherry Antonetti. We're at 1-573-4-BREAD, 4-1-573-4-BREAD-4. And I thought since Advent is already underway, can you believe that it's Advent already?
It's kind of stunning. I always panic that I'm going to forget to get the Advent candles before Advent starts. And so I've taken to buying them when we get to the week of Thanksgiving on Amazon. Okay. But I 1 year I was clever and bought two sets and I've never remembered that I bought two sets until I've got the new set that's shown up each year. So I always have an extra spare.
Okay.
But
we got a bunch of them or a bunch of Advent stuff. Got the four Advent candles because beginning of Advent, our parish always does this big Advent workshop for kids. And
that's cool.
It's all crafty things. So
the toilet paper rolls with the tissue paper sticking out of it. And
the whole smack. Yeah. So we got the Advent candles. We haven't actually gotten as far as putting the Advent candles out on our dinner table because that would require complex effort. But we have got we did get the candles. So that's good. And it poured rain here.
Just
endless soaking, drenching rain. And then at the end of the day on Thanksgiving, it started getting really windy, which I love. I love it when the wind howls around the house. It's one of my favorite things. And plus, after a big windstorm, it's always really nice the next day, which it was. So you got crystal clear skies and blue skies and
nice.
So had a wonderful time. Yeah, it was really great. Just everything that you want Thanksgiving to be. And then suddenly, without warning, Advent began.
I know, that was astonishing.
I was minding my own business and suddenly I was waiting.
Right, and blessed waiting, yes.
And that's what I thought we could talk about today. I thought I would begin with one of my favorite poems. There aren't a lot of things that Puritans did right that that I appreciate. Thanksgiving is one of them. I like the Thanksgiving thing, although technically...
Props to them.
To the Puritans on Thanksgiving. They got... you know, they got founded in the United States, right? Eventually, it took them a while, and it took a lot of other input from a lot of other people. Well done, Puritans. Good job. And anyway, but one of the things that they did was they gave us John Milton.
Yes.
Who was a great poet and a whack theologian. But okay. Well, he was. I mean, he eventually became an Arian. A lot of people don't know that. Although all he really did was just he was ahead of the curve for Puritans, a lot of whom eventually became Arians. It became called Unitarianism when it finally reached its maturity in New England. But really, all it is just a resurgent Arianism and a denial of the deity of Jesus. But before he became an Arian, he wrote things like Paradise Lost and Paradise Regained. By the time he wrote Paradise Regained, I think he was already becoming an Arian. And he also had other odd opinions. He was he was in favor of polygamy.
That's odd.
He was a strict biblical literalist
and not very Puritan, I might add.
he came to the conclusion, like another Protestant that a lot of people are unaware of, Martin Luther also said that polygamy was fine, which is interesting. He looked at people like the patriarchs and said they had several wives, so you know, must be okay. So, but anyway,
I paid a little attention to the actual stories that involved that.
Ah, okay. So anyway, he writes a poem, actually, as he is going blind.
Oh wow.
It was one of the tragedies of Milton's life that he is going blind. And he writes a poem called Poignantly, When I Consider How My Light is Spent.
Oh, wow.
And the poem goes this way. It says, when I consider how my light is spent, ere half my days in this dark world and wide, and that one talent, which is death to hide, lodged with me useless, though my soul more bent to serve therewith my maker, and present my true account, lest he returning chide, doth God exact day labor light denied, I fondly ask. But patience to prevent that murmur soon replied, God doth not need either man's work or his own gifts, who best bear his mild yoke, they serve him best. His state is kingly. Thousands at his bidding speed, and post o'er land and ocean without rest, they also serve who only stand and wait. That's where that line comes from. And and so it's certainly something that I resonate with. I feel like, you know, especially I'm 58 years old. So I've got, you know, I'm on the downhill slope in terms of lifespan. I'm a boomer, so I'm probably going to, you know, live on to be a parasite on society for, you know, several decades. But of course, as you get older, your energy flags, you know, you're not as smart as you thought you were, you know, things that you used to be able to do, you can't do anymore. And you're kind of looking at, you know, watching your years stretch out and thinking, what am I going to do with myself? And is anybody interested in what I can do for them? You know, and all right. of all those questions. And you realize how much time you spend waiting around for stuff.
Oh, gosh. As
you know,
talking to the choir, someone who's spent, you know, about 10 years pregnant.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Around stuff.
Yeah. You know, blessed waiting. Got that one. Understand it.
Yeah. But that's what Advent is all about. And, you know, when you consider the length of the Old Testament.
Yes.
Compared to the length of the New Testament.
Right.
It's really striking how much of our history consists of waiting around. And you know, even when you look at the life of Christ, I mean, the New Testament is really focused on about a 72-hour period in the life of Jesus.
That's the most important part. Yeah,
that's the most active. And then before that is prologue. But before right. the prologue, before the baptism in the River Jordan, what's Jesus doing? Well, 30 years of waiting around, you know, for the missions. Yeah. I mean, he's not doing nothing, obviously. He's learning a trade and all the rest of what he, you know, what he does. But what's really striking, of course, is that once he's learned the trade, it has nothing really to do with his mission.
Right.
And he basically abandons the trade once he goes to begin his mission. But before that, you've got 9 months of waiting from the Blessed Virgin Mary. And before that, you've got thousands upon thousands of years.
Yeah, and you got the Blessed Mother going, okay, for 30 years, that's a long time to be patient.
Yeah. But it seems to be part of how things go is that God seems to not be in a big hurry. You know, before you had thousands of years of human beings waiting, you had millions and millions of years with no human beings around at all.
Well, you know, he's infinite. So we're our idea, you know, we think that, you know, patience is we can't even stand patience in like films. We have to have like the long process of mastering a skill condensed to a 30-second montage showing a person laboring where it's sped up and you have, you know, crescendo music in the background. And that's how you know they labored at something for a long time is you watch the same, you know, 30 seconds of the person doing something.
It's Rocky training montage.
Right. That's right. You know, and that tells us that they worked hard for a long time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But that's, you know, I remember one time I was driving across Eastern Washington. And there is an amazing amount of nothing out in Eastern Washington.
Okay.
Once you leave Spokane and you start heading west, you know, you run across a couple of little towns. But then just really a great deal of nothing, a surprising amount of nothing. And if you leave Spokane going the other way, there's even more nothing going across, you know.
The immensity of it all, yes.
In Montana, okay. It's just a huge amount of nothing out there, you know. And I remember thinking about that and wondering about why you have all of that empty space. And we'll talk about empty space when we return. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Sherry Antonetti on Breadbox Media, and we will be back.
Right, come back
after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Hello, and Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. And we are here today with Sherry Antonetti. We're talking a little bit about the theology of waiting around. If you want to join us, you can give us a call or text us at 1-573-4-BREAD-4. You can also tweet us at Breadbox Media.
And you were talking about the open spaces and how, you know, the wide and the vastness of things. And, you know, I think God wants us to understand that vastness, because he keeps giving great examples like the distance between the stars or, you know, the ocean, or just, you know, if you've ever, you know, how long it takes just to even have a baby, yeah. You know, 9 months. It's an incredibly long time to long to see somebody's face.
Yeah. And it is one of the curious facts of creation, but also facts of revelation, that God really, yeah, seems to just take his time, you know, about everything.
He's got all the time there is, so, you know, he can wait like that.
Well, I remember there's a line in the Chronicles of Narnia in The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, where Aslan promises Lucy that he will see her soon. And she says, you know, when does that mean? And he says, well, all times are soon to me.
Yes, my favorite book.
And it's something that troubles, I think, a lot of Christians from time to time. It certainly has bothered me now and then, is, you know, you read the New Testament and, well, for example, you know, we spent a fair amount of time recently in the book of Revelation,
right,
coming up on Christ the King. And you have Jesus saying things like, behold, I am coming soon.
Yes.
In a book that was written 2,000 years ago, you're going, what do you mean by soon? You know,
he means all times are soon. Yes.
All times are soon. Yeah. And that's the thing, is really, it's funny, because the same people that will often object to Christianity and say, well, you know, where's the second coming that Jesus promised, you know, are also the same people who will also say that Christians are provincial and parochial, because they have no, you know, the people who wrote scripture have no real grasp of the size of the universe or the age of the universe. They think it was all made in 6 days, and now we know that the universe is 13 billion years old. And to which my response is, so really you're saying 2,000 years is not really all that long.
I love that. You're applying logic, Mark. What are you doing?
Which is true. I mean, the thing is we don't know. You know, Jesus doesn't really actually say, of course, when he's returning. And there's a good reason for that. And it's a reason nobody would ever have invented. It's that Jesus himself says he does not know.
Which is a remarkable. Yeah, that's a remarkable thing to say.
The last thing that you would ever invent for Jesus to say, right?
Right.
If you're, we're inventing this story of a God who became man.
September 17th.
We're going to admit ignorance to God, right?
Right.
Nobody would invent a saying like that. This is absolutely certain that this is one of the things that Jesus said, because no believer would have invented that. Here's what you would do if you're a believer and you're making this stuff up. You don't attribute ignorance to your God.
No, you would give some sort of crazy series of predictions of what would happen.
The easy thing.
With numbers.
The last day is coming. I know when it will be, but you are not worthy to know. That's how you handle that problem.
Yeah. When the easy, Cubs win the World Series. When the Cubs win the World Series. There you go.
I know all about it, but I'm not going to reveal it to you. That's what Jesus would say if you were just inventing this. But instead, you have Jesus saying of that day or that hour, no one knows, neither the angels in heaven nor the Son. Nobody would have invented that saying. So if Jesus doesn't know when the end is, we don't know when the end is either.
Right.
And that's all fine. But what Advent then points us to is, it points us right back to the theology of waiting around.
But it also points back to a time when we actually did know when Jesus did become incarnational, which they keep saying didn't happen. The whole point of this Christmas is to mark a moment in actual time that actually happened, and which revealed God's plan, which is what they keep clamoring. We need God's plan. Please lay it out for us. Well, he did. This wasn't in a galaxy long ago, far away. It happened in a specific place, a specific time, in a little podunk town, Bethlehem, stable. And what we get jaded eyes. We don't hear the scripture as it would have happened. I mean, you imagine if you've ever gone camping, it's cold, it's dark, it's unpleasant. These are shepherds. They're living out in the cold, dark, and unpleasant. And then the sky lights up. We have the sky light up all the time. Planes go over. There are flashlights. So it doesn't freak us out. But I want us to imagine the sky lit up, and it's not a plane, and it's not a comet, and it's not, lighting from the freeway. It's an unexplained light that we've never doesn't fit in with how we understand the world.
Right.
And unexplained voices singing to us, talking to us, that, we have no way of describing because we've not seen this before. We need to recognize how freaked out we might have been.
I always wonder what it must have really sounded like to hear angels singing.
Yes.
That's got to be something.
That's the thing is that, we get kind of jaded where we don't think about or contemplate the real reality that people actually who existed then heard that.
Yeah.
They heard that and they went to the stable, which in and of itself had to be a mark of faith, because if you were not shaking in your shoes from seeing angels and being told, behold, good tidings, you might be going to go check and see, am I okay? Does anyone else see this? No, instead they follow the directions, which is amazing. How much courage did it take to go to the stable?
Yeah.
Follow that.
Yeah. And, that it was, on the one hand, when it comes, the fulfillment makes sense to those who have the eyes to see it. To those who don't have the eyes to see it, of course, it never makes sense.
It cannot make sense. No, it can't make sense.
But even with the people that it finally made sense to, what you're looking at in Scripture is something that took a long time for them to sort out. You get the sense from the apostles that they're people who recognize that something really important is happening here, but also that they're people who don't know what the significance. They know it's significant. It's sort of like, Richard Dreyfuss in Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yes.
He keeps looking at the mashed potatoes saying, this means something, this is important, but he doesn't know what it means.
Right.
He just knows it means something. And the apostles, you get that sense from them as well, that they know that something important is happening, and they can't for the life of them figure out what that is. Even when the something that is important is telling them, we're going to Jerusalem, I'm going to be killed, and on the third day, I will rise from the dead. They're like, what does he mean by that?
He doesn't mean that literally, does he?
He does mean something else, right?
I think he's speaking metaphorically. Yeah, I think it's symbolic. This is kind of like that bread stuff, isn't it?
It's just, I'm not tracking here. I'm sure that this means something. But, and so you can see on the one hand that they're waiting for something. And after the resurrection, he tells them, once again, go to Jerusalem and wait.
And wait. Yes. And, again, you're still waiting after the crucifixion. You're still waiting.
And they're still trying to put it together. So what's the question they ask him? Well, okay, now are you going to inaugurate the kingdom? And by kingdom, they've got a very clear idea in mind. They're not thinking of the kingdom of heaven. They're thinking of
a worldly empire.
They're thinking of David Part Two.
Yeah, Rome, but our Rome.
Yeah, right. This time it's payback time.
Yes.
And so they're still not fully getting it, and they don't really start to get it fully until Pentecost.
But that's part of showing you that it's grace that helps you to understand these mysteries, not even exposure doesn't get it to you.
That one of the things that, you know, when I was a Protestant, you know, I was always taught, well, scripture is the answer to everything, and so you need more diligent Bible study. You know, and when the apostles on the Emmaus Road, they get the very first Christian Bible study from the best Christian Bible study teacher they could possibly have.
And they still didn't get it to the breaking of the bread. So all you CCD teachers out there, rest easy. Feel at peace.
Still not tracking, you know. No, wait.
I liken it to a person who is in love and everyone else can see it, but the light hasn't clicked that that's what it is yet.
For the person that's in love?
Yes, they're in like, but they haven't yet recognized this is something much more substantial.
Well,
than what I imagined.
Something that I want to discuss when we return. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Sherry Antonetti talking about the theology of waiting around. And we'll be back on Breadbox Media right after this.
If you enjoy listening to Mark Shea and all of his wonderful co-hosts here on Connecting the Dots, then consider becoming a friend of the show and provide your support today. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show. Thank you.
Welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we're here today with Sherry Antonetti. We're talking about the theology of waiting around. You were mentioning before the break the phenomenon of
being in love, yes.
Being in love and not quite realizing that you're in love.
Yes. That moment before, in which movies love to make, you know, they love to show that moment. But in reality, it's much more nebulous. Like, you know, people suddenly realize I'm in love with this person. And yep. That's and that changes everything.
Yep.
And
one of the things that a priest friend of mine pointed out when he was talking about the nature of revelation. And this has everything to do, by the way, with why. In my speculative view, God seems to be so fond of letting everything take its own sweet time. This priest friend of mine was saying that revelation proceeds not like a math equation, but like falling in love.
Nice.
So he was saying people don't really... you know, the apostles didn't really sit down with the Old Testament and create a messianic checklist and then say, well, according to my calculations, the Messiah will be born in Bethlehem and, fulfill X prophecy, Y prophecy, and Z prophecy, and then, you know, die and rise from the dead and all that stuff. That's not really what happened. And that's not what happens when you fall in love. You don't get up in the morning and say, today at 11 a.m., I'm going to go to the grocery store and I'm going to meet,
the girl of my dreams. Yes.
Okay. The girl of my dreams or the man of my dreams. You know, that's not how it works. The way it really works is you're minding your own business, doing whatever. And then all of a sudden this person falls on your head out of a clear blue sky.
Right.
You have this encounter, and then you spend the rest of your life asking, what was
why? And who are you?
Yeah. What just happened to me? You know?
Yes.
And that's how revelation proceeds. And so the church doesn't have a checklist. What it does is it looks at all the Old Testament prophecies in hindsight and then goes, oh, I get it.
hey, look.
I was looking at this thing the whole time. I didn't even see it, right? And now here it is. And it's like, how could I have not seen it? And that's part of what the experience of waiting around is for rumination. Waiting around is so that you have a ton of time to think and pray and feel your way through your life and your experience and make sense of it in light of what God has done.
It's like adoration. You go, and I don't know about you, but like the first 15 minutes, I'm like trying to figure out how to get my mind quiet. And then I'm trying to do something with adoration for a while there, where I'm praying the rosary or reading scripture. And it's an attempt, but it's not until I stop trying to do adoration that I actually begin to adore.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, there's something about it. It's the same sort of principle that goes into, C.S. Lewis talks about the way in which the pursuit of holiness is you don't really become holy by trying to be holy. You become holy by focusing on something else. It's sort of like trying to become healthy.
Yes.
You know, the worst way in the world to be healthy is to focus on your health. You just turn into a hypochondriac, you know? You just
and you will make everyone else miserable in the process.
Yeah, he says, you know, the way you become healthy is by focusing on other things, on exercise and doing the things that you love and getting outside and eating foods that you like that are good for you. Right. And your health is a byproduct. And Jesus says the same thing. Seek first the kingdom of heaven, and everything else will be added as well. And so if you seek heaven, then you'll get earth thrown in. If you seek earth, then you won't even get that.
It was like I have a freshman in college, and she was saying that she, you know, was wanting to, you know, how hard it is to make friends. And I said, stop trying to make friends. Just go do something. Go volunteer. Go be doing something, and you will find friends.
Right.
You know, and that's how it works.
Yeah. They're part of providence.
Yes.
And in that way, I think that's part of why God has built the universe to be a place where an enormous amount of waiting around happens, because what that leaves space for is our free creative cooperation.
Yes.
With grace.
Well, think about the bread and wine. They take a long time to create. If you ever made bread, or if you've ever gone to a vineyard and looked at really good wines and how long they took to ferment and become what they are.
And grow. I mean, because that's the creative thing is, you know, there's the old joke about, I could create, the scientist who says I could create, you know, living things if I had the proper ingredients. And God's reply is, get your own ingredients, you know. And that's the thing is, you know, when we're looking at God's creative act, one of the things that you can often I went on a scout trip one time. And it was like this geology trip with this guy who was a fossil expert and stuff. And so we went out in the Cascade Mountains and we're looking around for fossils. And in the course of the discussion, he's talking about what created the Cascade Mountain Range and what created the Olympic Range, which you can see from the Cascade Range because it's right across the sound. And so in the course of it, he said to the kids, would you have liked to have been here and seen it when the Olympic Mountains were being created? And they all, yeah, that would have been cool to see. And he said, well, take a look, because it's happening now as fast as it ever did. They're still being built. And, so the Cascade Range grows like, I don't know, you know, an inch every century or something like this, you know. But God's creative act is like that. We have this notion that the miraculous has to always be instantaneous and lickety-split. But the church's teaching is, since the entire act of creation is at its root is a miraculous act, it's going on now as fast as it ever did, and God has taken a very leisurely 13.5 billion years, and he's not done yet. And now we're part of it.
Right. And I'd like to stay and be a part of it for a lot of time. So please, God, take your time. Work with me.
Yes, I'm happy to be part of it. But that's it, you know, is that he creates and he uses creatures as free cooperators in the creative act. And he uses us in a peculiar way because we're able to do something that no other creature can do, which is we have the capacity for reason. And so we can, you know, the dog praises God by being a dog. Just
right.
By virtue of what the dog is, that's how the dog it praises God.
And the tree, yes.
Right, but we can praise God freely or not with our reason, and we can participate in the creative act by ourselves being, as J.R.R. Tolkien called us, sub-creators. So I can write a story and bring into existence characters in a world that never existed before, because God has put that in me to be able to do that, because I'm a free creature. Or, you know, we can refuse to do that. And so we can act as hindrances to the will of God, which, of course, doesn't ultimately thwart God.
It thwarts us.
It thwarts us, you know. But he respects our freedom that much. And it's that respect for freedom that I think is also really part of what we have to consider when we're looking at the theology of waiting around. That part of what, you know, why does it take so long for the redemption to break in the world, into the world? Well, a lot of the reason it takes so long is because you're not doing anything.
What are you doing?
I'm not doing anything, you know. What's a holdup, Shay? You
know, I've not contributed.
You asked me to do this thing, and you haven't done it. You know,
it's a good point, and an alarming point, actually, to think about. You know, perhaps the reason why we think miracles being so quick is because those are the ones we can recognize.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. So the
we
miraculous,
can see that one.
The miraculous healing, the guy who was dying and is now not dying.
Yes.
And it all happened in the space of, you know, 10 seconds. We see that as a miracle, but it's hard for us to grasp the fact that your existence right now, the fact that there is a Shary Antonetti instead of not.
Yes.
That's also a miraculous act.
Yes.
And all of creation was leading up to the moment when Shary Antonetti, you know, made her debut, you know.
Wow.
That's an amazing thing to realize, but that's,
well said.
That's true of each person, you know.
Yes.
So anyway,
happy Advent.
Happy Advent. Want to thank you for being on the show today, Shary. You've been listening to Connecting the Dots. Our producer today is Danny Head. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we will be back tomorrow with Mr. Michael Litchens. Until then, have a lovely evening. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.